I thought I'd start talking about a little bit about how we think about the approach to the Building Schools of the Future programme. What we describe as a kind of rational planning model of way of thinking about it. And then we'll get into more specifically to my colleagues talking about some of the services we offer. So where might we start? Strikes me the obvious place to start in thinking about building school design is here, isn't it? That's a statement of the obvious. Then an interesting thought that we have, that what we feel many people are trying to do is move straight from thoughts about a learner to thoughts about building design. And what we're suggesting is that there is an intervening step. And the argument goes something like this. First of all, what's our future model for learning? What is it we're trying to offer to these learners? Then can we define this as a set of services, using a particular set of language, to the learner? So what's our aspiration for learners? What's our set of services we want to offer learners? What does that mean for organisational design? And then what that might mean for building design. So the thoughts about building design are actually the fourth step of an argument that starts for learners, starts with a vision for learning for the future, says, okay, what are the services we might want to offer learners? What do I mean by a service? Mentoring. Yeah? May or may not mean something for building design, but let's think about the organisational design issues around mentoring. What other services might we want to offer to learners? Security, safety, the Every Child Matters outcomes, achievement. We have a whole set of things that we want to offer to the learner. On the basis of those, we can think about, well, what kind of organisation, some of which might exist inside the school, some of which might exist somewhere else within a city learning centre, some of which might exist within the local FE college, some of which might exist virtually, and what does that mean for an organisational design to offer that set of services? And then, once the clarification's been set around the organisational design, you can start thinking about building design. You want to know who else uses this model? The obvious people are supermarkets and banks.
Sorry, I've taken that out the back of that.
What supermarket chains do now is they think through completely what's the set of services we want to offer to the shopper, not how do we design a supermarket. Once they've designed the set of services, then they can make decisions about which they provide directly, which they provide indirectly, which they provide virtually, which they provide physically, and then and only then, after clarifying that set of services, do they move into things like designing shops. Because if you've made the business decision that the service about giving people regular updates on their bank account is going to be provided virtually and online, that's a bit that has implications for how you design your bank. This is blindingly obvious, isn't it? Absolutely blindingly obvious. Hardly anybody's approaching it like this, in our view. Hardly anybody's approaching it. What's far more common is a vision for learner, and now let's start thinking about classroom design. You know, let's start thinking about corridors. Let's start thinking about these sorts of things. Instead of saying, well, what's one of the services we want to offer learners? That every day they communicate in French with a native French speaker. It might be a service we want to offer learners. We might decide that's the sort of service we want to offer virtually, stating the obvious, rather than through the physical building. And that has implications for the physical design of the building. So, we're very much interested in how you translate aspirations for the learner into organisational design as a step towards thinking about building design. Yeah. Again, I have friends who worked in retail back in the 1980s, and they worked for interior design and architects practices back in the 1980s. And for those of you who watched, there was a Ronnie Barker thing, Open All Hours. That shop design disappeared in the 1980s. And there was a whole set, and they went through exactly this process. They said, what are the sorts of services we need to offer to shoppers? If it's an expensive shop, time to reflect on a purchase might be a service you want to offer. And you had a whole range of interesting things like settees and couches and coffee areas started to appear in shops on the basis of providing that service, time to reflect. If someone is going to spend $8,000 on something, they maybe need to think about it. They don't want to just stand at a counter to do the transaction. a conversation I had with the person who used to head up what was then called the Standards and Effectiveness Unit at the DFES, who said it was only when he saw his own 14-year-old boy doing his maths homework on the computer whilst at the same time being in a chat space talking to another kid in another village that went to the same school and recognising that they were co-tutoring each other, that he saw there was a whole raft of different ways of supporting learners, like peer-to-peer co-tutoring. One particular example of what we mean by different models, different ways of providing this service for learners. All learners need support, they need support beyond the school day, co-tutoring by other learners might be part of that. Another example, and you have to decide whether this is your vision of heaven or hell, back at my office, I have the name of the school that I think will be the first one to provide out-of-hours support in basic numeracy sourced from the Indian subcontinent. The technology works, the clocks work, and the salary structure works. It's absolutely doable. If you want to have from 6 in the evening till 8 in the evening support for basic numeracy sourced from the Indian subcontinent in your school, it's doable. Whole different ways of thinking about, and that has implications for organisational design, doesn't it? Has implications for what you think of the boundaries of the school. Let's take some of the others. What I'm talking about, different ways of recognising learners. If I were to ask you, let's choose a classic GCSE history kind of thing, three causes of the French Revolution. You could probably have a go at that, those of you who've done a bit of history. If I said, I want you to answer the question, what are the three causes of the French Revolution through doing a tap dance or something bizarre like that? Most people would struggle. It's not the question itself that makes it difficult. It's the medium through which you're being asked to demonstrate what you know and how that's being recognised. Once you start introducing technology to the equation, of course, you've got a whole raft of different ways of recognising what learners do, what learners can do. So, for example, the school that in GCSE PE introduced digital video and their GCSE results transformed, not necessarily because the kids' PE was any better, though it was, but because there was a whole raft of different ways of them demonstrating their PE competence. And again, that follows through into organisational design and building design. And I won't talk about this about ICT engaging learners, but the key message I'm saying before I'm passing over to my colleagues is, if we start from the learner, think about the services we want to offer for the learner, step back and start thinking what that might mean for different models of organisational design, then we're more likely to come up with a transformative building design that we're all hoping for from this programme. I now pass over to Peter to look specifically at some of the things around organisational design.